The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. The first article is a news brief, and it comes from the Harvard Health Letter of December 2021. It's entitled, Harvard Study, Healthy Diet is Associated with Lower COVID-19 Risk and Severity. Here's more incentive to eat a healthy diet. It's associated with a reduced risk of developing COVID-19 and its serious complications. According to a study published online by the journal Gut, September 6, 2021. Researchers asked about 593,000 adults, mostly middle-aged and older, what they ate in February 2020, and then followed their health through September. Scientists found that people who reported eating the most fruits, vegetables, and legumes had a 9% lower risk of getting COVID and a 41% lower risk of developing severe COVID during the study period, compared with people who reported eating the least fruits and vegetables. Researchers also found a link between COVID and a poor diet or socioeconomic disadvantages. If you could remove just one of those factors, diet or disadvantage, we think nearly a third of COVID-19 cases could have been prevented, says the study's lead author and research associate, Jordi Marino, who is at the Diabetes Unit and Center for Genomic Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. The study was observational and doesn't prove conclusively that a healthy diet prevents COVID. Researchers point out that getting vaccinated and wearing a mask in indoor settings are still the most important approaches to ward off the disease. Finally, the last article from the Harvard Health Letter of December 2021 is entitled, Helpful Gadgets for a Fuzzy Memory. Take advantage of tools to help you get organized. Just because you experience a wee bit of forgetfulness from time to time doesn't mean your memory is failing. It's just prone to the effects of aging. Memory starts to weaken once we hit our 30s. Add a few more decades and plenty of important information to keep track of, like busy schedules, medication regimens, and monthly bills, and you'll notice memory changes more keenly, says Dr. Andrew Budson, a neurologist and chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at VA Boston Healthcare System. Fortunately, there's lots of gadgets that support the memory. Get some for yourself and give a few tools to a friend. What are some basic reminders? Well, one is a talking motion-activated sensor. The device allows you to record a reminder message that will play automatically when you walk by and trigger the sensor. For example, you could record, "Don't forget your wallet," and place the sensor by your front door, or "Drink more water," and keep the sensor by the refrigerator. A voice recorder or a voice recording pen or watch. These devices record your voice or somebody else's at the touch of a button. That's handy for making lists or capturing important points from a conversation, perhaps with a doctor, that you can write down later. Make sure others in a conversation agree to being recorded. Office supplies. There's no reason to memorize your to-do lists if an external memory aid can help you take advantage of it, Dr. Budson advises. He suggests using whiteboards, dry erase markers, pads and pens, colorful sticky notes, calendars, or daily planners. Sprinkle these tools throughout the house. Be sure to get a calendar that's got large, easy-to-see numbers and extra room to write notes on each day of the week. One of the best ways to remember where you've left objects like keys or glasses is to keep them in a predetermined spot. If you put your wallet in the same place every day, it becomes a habit. Once it's a habit, you don't need to think about where it is, just like you don't need to think about how to ride a bike. There's a couple of things you can do to support this habit. One is to install key hooks and mini shelves by your door or another spot in your room and use them regularly. Also, get doorknob organizers. These look like do not disturb signs with pockets on them. Hang one on your doorknob and store things you want to grab on the way out of the house, like keys or driving glasses. Another thing that can be helpful is medication managers. Juggling a medication regimen is challenging no matter how many pills you're taking. If a standard pill box isn't working for you, consider some alternatives. And one of those alternatives is automatic pill dispenser. Load pills into this organizer, and it will dole them out at the right time and in the right amounts. Some dispensers sound alarms or use smartphone apps to alert you about pill-taking time. Another good idea is instead of an automatic dispenser, just to use a digital alarm to let you know when it's time to take medicines. Smartphones and watches allow you to set regular alarms for different times throughout the day. Whichever style of alarm you choose, look for one with large numbers and backlighting so you can see the numbers easily. Another thing that can be really helpful is trackers. If you often wind up hunting for your glasses, the TV remote, or other objects, small tracking devices can help. You just attach a tracker to an object, and then the tracker sends signals to your smartphone, showing the object's location. There's also trackers that send signals to a remote-controlled device. If you lose the object, you click the remote, and it makes the tracker emit a loud sound, leading you to the lost item. Examples of trackers would be eyeglass trackers. These are small strips you attach to the long part of the frame worn over your ear. Also, there are keychain-style trackers. These are small, flat devices with a large hole, so you can add them to key rings or tie them to objects. You can also slip a tracker into your luggage, purse, or backpack. Also, there are wallet trackers. These trackers are about the size and shape of a credit card and work well in a wallet, a purse, or any bag. Then there are tracker stickers. These are small, flat, round trackers with adhesive backing. They're handy to stick on TV remotes, laptops, earbud cases, pill boxes, and more. Another thing is smartphones. If you're tech savvy, smartphones already come loaded with many of the devices that we've mentioned, like calendars, notepads, voice recorders, and alarms. You can also download apps designed to hold important information like passwords or manage your medications. Possible medication reminder apps include MediSafe, which is at www.medisafeapp.com, and MyTherapy Pill Reminder, which is at www.mytherapyapp.com. Both of these are available in the Android or Apple app stores. Choose a memory aid that can make a difference in your life. Don't be seduced by a fancy appearance or features you don't need. Look for good, basic functionality. And if you're using these tools and you still can't find anything or track appointments, it may be time to talk to your doctor about your memory, Dr. Budson suggests. It could be that an underlying condition, a medication side effect, or a vitamin deficiency is causing your cognitive challenges. Now I'm going to turn to a very important subject that's discussed in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is in November 2021. And this is a health letter that is has a long article about colorectal cancer screening. When it comes to comparing the many tests available for colorectal cancer screening, most doctors agree on one thing. The best test is the one you'll actually complete. Colorectal cancer is considered a preventable disease, mostly because screening is so effective. About one-third of those who should be screened for colorectal cancer are not up to date, says the American Cancer Society. Some are turned off by the discomfort and time required for the most frequently recommended screening method, the colonoscopy. Some people simply don't have the access to the health care that they need. This has driven researchers to develop new screening tests that are more convenient, more comfortable, and don't involve an invasive medical procedure, like colonoscopy. In addition, some recommendations now suggest that those at average risk should start having screening at age 45 instead of at age 50, which was the previous guidance. Nipping colon cancer in the bud. The colon, also called the large intestine or large bowel, is 5 feet long and forms a sort of squared-off question mark beneath the liver and stomach, ending with the rectum. When colon cancer develops, it can become apparent with a change in bowel habits or blood in the stool. Colorectal cancers often begin as precancerous growths called polyps. So finding these and removing them can prevent cancer from ever developing. A polyps look like a little red mushroom on the inside wall of the colon. Small polyps are about the size of a pencil eraser, while those considered large are about a half an inch in size. Most polyps will not become cancerous, but some do over a period of years. This year, about 150,000 Americans will be diagnosed with colon cancer, and 53,000 Americans will die of it, making colon cancer the top cancer killer in non-smokers. Colorectal cancer diagnosis increases with age. People's chances of developing colorectal cancer are nearly double in their 50s compared with the risk in their 40s, and the risk doubles again in their 60s. It's most frequently diagnosed in people between 65 and 74 years of age. While the chance of getting colorectal cancer remains low among those under 50, the incidence of colorectal cancer among people in their 40s has increased almost 15%, that's 1-5, since 2000. Some groups are disproportionately affected by colorectal cancer. When compared with other groups in the United States, African Americans are about 20% more likely to develop this cancer and 40% more likely to die of it. Lack of screening access is believed to be a factor in this higher death risk. With the increase in colorectal cancer in younger people, the new recommendation to begin testing at age 45 was finalized by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force in May 2021. Testing might begin even earlier for some, including those with close relatives with colorectal cancer and those who have an inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. While research shows that the tests have varying abilities to detect cancer or polyps, their differences tend to be even out when the tests are performed on their recommended time schedules. That's why less sensitive tests are recommended yearly, and those that are more sensitive, particularly for polyps, are recommended once a decade. Importantly, studies show that all screening tests reduce the incidence of cancer and help people live longer, a crucial measure of success against this deadly disease. Tests include colonoscopy. Of the many screening options, colonoscopy is used most frequently and is the standard to which other tests are compared. It's performed with a nimble, flexible tube called a colonoscope, with lights, a video camera, water nozzles, and openings for tiny surgical tools. A medical professional steers this through the colon in a hunt for growths, and the device can be used to cut out polyps as they are found. Doctors expect to find a polyp in about 1 out of every 4 colonoscopies performed. This ability to find and remove polyps with great accuracy makes colonoscopy the preferred screening method for many situations. How frequently should you get a colonoscopy? Well, every 10 years, or more frequently if you have certain findings or risk factors. The colonoscopy requires a bowel prep, which usually means drinking a liquid laxative that cleans out the colon before the test. You can reduce discomfort from the prep by eating a low-fiber diet 2 days prior to the test, avoiding solid foods the day before, and refrigerating the solution before drinking it. Low-volume laxative solutions with less bowel fluid prep fluid to drink than is usually required are available, but these low-volume laxatives can be much more costly. Also, the procedure usually requires sedation, so if you're undergoing a colonoscopy, you'll need time to recover and someone to accompany you home. Alternatively, you might receive a flexible sigmoidoscopy. This uses a flexible tube called a sigmoidoscope to examine only the lower part of the colon. Occasionally, it may be preferred over a colonoscopy because the preparation and the test may take less time, and because people can sometimes see their primary care doctor for a flexible sigmoidoscopy. Another test that can be done is called multi-target stool DNA. And you probably know this as Cologuard from their many commercials. The multi-target stool DNA test, marketed as Cologuard, uses advances in genetic science to go beyond what previous non-invasive stool-based tests were able to do. The test was actually developed by a Mayo Clinic gastroenterologist and a Wisconsin-based company, and it was approved by the Food and Drug Administration. It has been completed 6 million times. However, a colonoscopy is usually recommended for people at higher risk, like those who have a family history of colon cancer. Like other stool-based tests, Cologuard looks for evidence of blood that might not be visible. But this test also looks for genetic changes from cells shed by the colon, allowing it to detect the abnormal DNA of cancerous cells, polyps, and other precancerous growths. Studies show it is more sensitive than other stool-based tests at detecting cancer in its earlier stages. Cologuard should be recommended every 1 to 3 years. The test requires that the sample consists of an entire bowel movement. The kit comes with everything necessary to prepare at home, including a collection device, preservative, and package material for mailing to the lab. It does not require a bowel prep, dietary restrictions, or sedation before the test. A positive result must be followed by a colonoscopy for diagnosis and treatment. Check your insurance plan for coverage of a colonoscopy following a positive result of any screening test, as it may not be covered as fully as it would be if a colonoscopy were the initial screening test. The next test that is sometimes done is called FIT, F-I-T, which stands for Fecal Immunochemical Test. The FIT detects traces of blood, which is sometimes an invisible symptom of cancer, in a tiny sample of stool. The test cannot detect most polyps, which is why it should be done every year. A tool supplied with the kit is used to collect a small stool sample that's brushed onto a test card and returned by mail. No bowel prep is required, and there are no dietary limitations. But of course, you should keep in mind that a positive test must be followed by colonoscopy. Finally, there's a test called CT colonography. That's colonography. Sometimes called a virtual colonoscopy, this test uses x-rays to examine the colon. The test is less invasive than a colonoscopy and only takes about 10 minutes. It's less likely than a colonoscopy to detect certain precancerous lesions and polyps. It's sometimes considered an option for those who cannot have a colonoscopy. But if you have an irregular finding, a colonoscopy needs to be done anyway. And the CT colonography is usually recommended every 5 years. It requires the same bowel prep as a colonoscopy. Because other parts of the body can be viewed during the procedure, it sometimes prompts further, possibly unnecessary tests unrelated to colon cancer. And what they mean by that is that maybe it will show up something that looks abnormal in your liver, and you might have to have further tests to look into that. Now I'm going to turn to another article in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, which is entitled Root Canals. So we're going to talk a little about dentistry. If you have an infected tooth, the problem could be solved by removing the whole tooth and putting a dental implant in its place. But sometimes it's also possible to treat the infection and keep the tooth within a root canal. Advances in dentistry have led to less painful root canal treatments. Some say it's comparable to having a cavity filled. The procedure commonly requires 1 to 2 visits, but additional visits may be required in some cases. A root canal can be done by a general dentist or an endodontist. Endodontists specialize in root canal therapy. You might think your whole tooth is hard, like the enamel tops of your teeth that you see and brush every day, but within your tooth is a soft core known as the dental pulp, which holds blood vessels and nerves. This pulp is in an area called the pulp chamber, and in pulp canals that lead all the way down from the pulp chamber to the tip of the tooth's root in the jawbone. The number of canals vary. Canine and incisor teeth may have just one canal, and molars can have 3 or 4 canals. Root canals are a treatment for those who have pulp inflammation, infection of the pulp, or an infected pocket of pus, and sometimes for those who have a fractured tooth. Your pulp can become inflamed with pulpitis from trauma, a fracture of the tooth, or from a deep cavity when the bacteria infiltrate the tooth. This can lead to pulp death and ultimately to an abscessed tooth. Signs and symptoms that a root canal may be necessary include having spontaneous or unprovoked tooth pain, pain during chewing, gum swelling, tooth discoloration, temperature sensitivity, or development of an abscess. Signs and symptoms of an abscess can include a persistent toothache, drainage near the tooth through the gum tissue, swelling of the face or cheek, and maybe even a low-grade fever. To address the infection or inflammation, the pulp in the problematic tooth must be cleaned out. In a typical root canal procedure, dental x-rays are done, and then a local anesthetic is used to control pain. To help make sure your tooth stays dry, a sheet known as a dental dam is put in your mouth. A hole is made through the top of the tooth, and small dental instruments enter the hole and take out the pulp. The pulp is cleared out all the way down to the tip of the tooth's root. The root canals can be reshaped and enlarged to allow better access for filling later. And to fight infection, your pulp chamber and root canals are flushed and cleaned with special solutions. In some cases, you may go home at this point and then return for another visit to finish the root canal. This can allow the swelling and infection to go down. The dentist or endodontist may put steroids or other medications into your tooth to help fight pain and infection in the meantime. Well, looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. Thank you.